Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
It's not just the American middle class that's in trouble. Take a look around the world. Greece, Italy, Iceland, Ireland, they all used to have prosperous middle classes, like us. Their financial bubbles popped first, and now, well, financial writer Michael Lewis calls them the new third world. Lewis is one of the few writers who can make you laugh out loud about financial disaster. No wonder his books are so popular. He's the author of Moneyball, The Blind Side, Liar's Poker, and now Boomerang. Steve Paulson couldn't get one of the characters in the new book out of his head.
Your new book, Boomerang, starts with a story about someone you met while you were actually researching your last book, The Big Short, a hedge fund manager named Kyle Bass. Why did he interest you?
Well, he's the one who dragged me into this story. I was interested in him in the first place because he was one of a handful of money managers who had made a fortune off the collapse of the subprime mortgage bond market. And he'd lost interest in the subprime mortgage bond market because he'd moved on to what he said was the next crisis, which was the sovereign debt crisis. And he painted a scenario for me that was perfectly terrifying, but that basically said the bad debts that have been accumulated in these incontinent years are being basically assumed by governments, and the governments aren't going to be able to support the debt, and governments are going to fall.
And he'd simply crunched some numbers, didn't he? I mean, looking at the amount of debt that was accumulated and the amount of revenue coming in, and this guy seemed to think there's no way these countries could survive.
He made one big assumption, which at that time nobody else was making, and the assumption was the debts of the big banks are effectively now government debts. The governments have decided they're going to backstop the banks. They're not going to let the banks fail, so they're going to assume these debts. And if you add those debts to the debts the countries were already running, which were high, and compared that to their revenues, their tax revenues, you could see that some of these countries really couldn't sustain the debt they'd taken on.
Okay, this kind of makes sense. I mean, it would seem to, and yet most of Wall Street, at least a couple of years ago, thought this hedge fund manager was dead wrong.
He was able to place bets against, for example, the government debt of Greece. He was making essentially a bet that its bonds would default. And to make this bet, he had to pay fractions of a percentage point. Pay a dollar and make 700, basically. But there's a reason for this. The notion of defaults of putatively affluent Western countries was preposterous until recently. And so the whole idea of sovereign default is a little strange because, you know, Greece, it's not going to, it turns out, he's right, it's not going to repay its debts. But it's as much a matter of willingness as ability. And it's a political judgment as much as an economic judgment.
Now, when you say that, of course, Greece is not going to repay its debt, why is that so obvious? Don't they have to repay their debt?
Well, they've already cut a preliminary agreement with the IMF and the European Union to repay only a fraction of the monies that it owes its bondholders. The bondholders have already tentatively agreed to take some losses on Greek government bonds. It's a question of how much.
Well, let's talk about the problems in Greece because at least the way you write about it, it's kind of mind-boggling how Greece got into such a mess. Tell me the problem here.
Well, the basic cause of all these national debt problems was that the financial markets made very cheap credit available to countries and people and companies without thinking too much about the risk. And Greece borrowed lots of money, the government borrowed lots of money, to bloat an already bloated state. And the Greek problem is at the root of it, really, is the relationship between the Greek people and the Greek government. They regard the government essentially as an entity to plunder. There are lots of government jobs that aren't real jobs. The Greek people get paid to be employed by the government, but actually not do very much.
Well, and you say that the average salary for a government job is nearly three times as much as the private sector jobs.
Yes, I mean you take one example, and it's a colorful example, but it's pretty representative. The Greek National Railroad, it's a government-owned railroad, has 100 million euros of revenue a year and pays out 400 million euros in salary every year. And the average employee of that railroad is paid 65,000 euros a year to work for it, which is more than the average employee of any private sector Greek company. So the government is regarded as a kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like a piñata that the Greek people can take wax at and get their goodies out of. And on the other side of it is they don't pay taxes. It's not part of the culture to pay taxes. Tax avoidance is the norm. I mean, you sit down with, as I did, with Greek tax collectors, and they will tell you that the quickest way to get fired as a tax collector is to be too aggressive about collecting taxes. That it's acceptable, for example, to take bribes from people not to collect their taxes, but not acceptable to be too aggressive in pursuing them.
Well, you also interviewed the Greek finance minister, and I have to say your account of that meeting reads almost like a comedy skit as he was explaining the depth of the problem. Can you describe what he was talking about?
Well, that was the Greek finance minister who stepped down just a couple of months ago because the problem he found was too intractable. Because actually, he was being blamed for implementing the demands of the European Union and the IMF and trying to collect taxes. He said the financial problems were much, much worse than anybody imagined. The deficit was much, much, much worse than anybody imagined because none of the taxes were collected. The tax collectors were taken off the streets. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, it was an election year. And in the election year in Greece, the party in power knows not to have the tax collectors out there at all. I said, oh my God. And he says, when I got here, I tried to round up all the different departments and figure out what we actually owed people. And it took a matter of a couple of weeks, and people were coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, here's another couple of billion euros that we haven't mentioned. And Greek people would tell you this unabashedly. They'd say, you know, everybody here cheats on taxes. Everybody here abuses the government jobs. It's just part of life here. And changing that is very hard.
Well, because the obvious response is you have to collect more taxes and you have to cut back on government spending. And yet when this was proposed, riots broke out in the streets.
Riots are breaking out on the streets right now, and they're getting worse. And they're getting worse because it's an entitlement culture. People assume that the individual Greek is being asked to change his way of life. It was very telling that one of the things that has protesters on the streets and has caused the Greek government's popularity ratings to sink to all-time lows is that the Greek government forced through a new tax. They really are trying to collect the taxes now, but they found it impossible to collect them the old-fashioned way. And they've pushed through a new property tax in which Greeks aren't billed the way you and I are billed for our property taxes because it's just assumed they'd cheat on them if they did it that way. It's being billed as an add-on to their electric bills. And they're being told that if they don't pay it, their electricity's cut off. But the way this thing has been playing out, the natural next step is all of a sudden you find the Greeks aren't paying their electric bills and mysteriously the lights remain on. I mean, they've been unbelievably elusive.
Now, these are fascinating stories, I have to say, kind of incredible stories. I do wonder how much this has to do with our own economic problems here in the United States. Is there a connection here? I mean, other than the fact that, you know, when we hear bad news about Greece, then the Dow tumbles. Is there a more direct connection than that?
There is a much more direct connection than that. The first connection is that if Greece goes belly up and doesn't repay French and German banks what it owes, then the people who are owed money by French and German banks, who are intertwined with those banks' activities, are going to be suspect. And American banks are exposed to those banks. So the American financial sector comes under attack in the markets. To me, the most interesting sort of connection between these European stories and America, though, is cultural. We did a number of things. We had a land bubble. We inflated our financial sector crazily. We also inflated our public sector crazily, especially at the level of the municipality. Public employee unions cut deals with states and cities that are going to, in some cases, bankrupt cities. So in a funny way, we kind of did it all. But if you wanted to sort of generalize about what the problem was in America that was exposed by this money event, it was that we seem to have got to a point where we're almost blind to the long-term interests of the society because we're excessively focused on a lot of short-term interests. And the short-termism of American life was really brought to the surface by the money.
I want to turn the tables a little bit and ask about you and how you do this kind of reporting.
Because I'm so interesting.
Well,
right?
I mean, you seem to, it's almost as if you're some cross between anthropologist and amused spectator. And obviously, you're good at sniffing out the money trail. How would you describe what you do?
I think of myself as pretty simply as just a writer, but I do a lot of just wandering around. So I had long lists of people to go talk to, interviewed all kinds of people, and starting at the top, you know, I could go see, in some cases, the head of state, and certainly the finance minister. But I would tend to go in with no great preconceived notion. It's usually some question, like, how come Greek people who borrowed all this money and aren't going to pay it back are the ones who are most outraged in Europe? I usually have some crude question I'm trying to answer, but I don't have much of a method. It really is sort of drifting towards the material that gets me jazzed. Hmm.
So a lot of it is who you happen to run into. I mean, it might not be some famous or important person, but the man on the street can give you some answers.
Yes, I do think you can learn a lot more about people and societies by looking at the parts of them that don't think are being examined. So if I were sitting with you and I was trying to decide what kind of guy you were, and I had to do it really quickly, I wouldn't pay much attention to, say, what you did with your hair or your face, because you yourself would be very self-conscious about that. But I might look at your fingernails, something you didn't think I was looking at. So with Greece, this is going to sound odd, but I had some social pressure to go write about the prime minister. He heard I was in town, and I kind of think he wanted me to write a profile of him. But the prime minister is, you know, he's going to be perfectly groomed. He's your hair. On the other hand, if you can find a couple of Greek tax collectors that no one's ever talked to, that's the dirt under the fingernails. That's how I went about it.
Michael Lewis, talking with Steve Paulson. Lewis is the author of Moneyball, Liar's Poker, and The Big Short. His latest is called Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World.